Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Artist First World Radio Network, home of the best new music you've never heard, and home of the best new talk shows you need to hear. Please don't forget to visit our archives page at www.artistfirst.com, where you can hear all our past shows for free and on demand. You are tuning in to the Dr. Maxine Thompson Show. This show airs at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time every Monday. For more information about this show and to listen to past shows for free, please visit artistfirst.com/Maxine Thompson. And now here's your host of the Dr. Maxine Thompson Show, Dr. Maxine Thompson.
Good evening. Thank you for tuning in to the Dr. Maxine Thompson Show. I'm Dr. Maxine Thompson of MaxineThompsonBooks.com and MaxineThompson.com. I'm the author of The Ebony Tree, award-winning Hostage of Lies, short story collection A Place Called Home, and latest novel, L.A. Blues. I'm also a contributor to best-selling anthologies, Secret Lovers, Never Knew Love Like This Before, All in the Family, and Proverbs for the People. All books are available nationwide or at my website. Tonight's guest is Charmaine R. Parker. She is the sister of national best-selling author Zane. She is also the author of debut novel, The Next Phase of Life. She is a former journalist who worked as a reporter and copy editor. She is also the current publishing director for Strayboard Books. Good evening. How are you doing, Charmaine?
Fine. How are you doing tonight, Dr. Maxine Thompson?
Oh, I am fine. I am so happy to have you on the show, and I'm excited that you've written your own book. I know you've edited so many books for Strayboard, so I'm glad that your writing talents have come out. I know they were there all along, weren't they?
Yes, thank you so much. I actually started writing as a child, as early as kindergarten, I'm told. I remember as early as 7. But my mom told me I actually started around kindergarten. I started writing poetry and short stories. And then I ended up, you know, going into journalism, which is totally the opposite of creative writing. It's hard, you know, hard news writing. I did write a lot of feature stories, interviewing various personalities, celebrities, and recording artists. So I started editing, copy editing in the newspaper business, and then I started editing when I joined the publishing world. So yes, it's been years in the making, and I have been planning to write a novel for so many years, I finally said, let me sit down and put my thoughts on paper. So I came up with The Next Phase of Life.
Well, why did you write your latest novel, The Next Phase of Life? I see it's getting rave reviews on Amazon, too.
Thank you. Yes, I've had fairly decent reviews on Amazon. For a long time, I kept thinking of a situation where you would have a female, a woman, who is looking for Mr. Right, and she happens to find that Mr. Right is actually in her backyard, at her back door, and someone that she would have least expected connecting with. So I thought it would be interesting to show a woman to hook up with a man that is totally, like, not totally opposite, but they're from different worlds. And I kind of just started with that theme, and then it grew. And then I decided to create the two female characters, other than the main characters, the two female characters are best friends. And they both are, I can relate to both of the friends. One is a fashionista, and the other one is a detective who used to be a journalist. She was an outstanding investigative reporter. And, of course, after the newspaper industry, you know, started waning during the Internet technology, she ended up getting laid off her position, and she decided to become a detective, and she started her own private detective agency. So I can relate to the characters as well. But I thought it would be something fun to explore.
That's good. I also wanted to know, in the next phase of life, were you thinking of how women now are living longer, having second careers? I know this is a second career for me.
Yes.
Being an agent and following my writing and so forth. And it's like we're living so much longer, and most people are working up until they retire. So I was kind of reading into it that this is kind of that people are so much more productive in their later years than they used to be.
Yes, that is one aspect of the next phase of life. And it's also that each of the friends are entering a new phase, as well as the long-lost sister of the lead character. Well, the lead character is Ty. Her younger sister, Trista, is from North Carolina. They have contrasting backgrounds. And Trista connects with Ty on Facebook, on the Internet. She hooks up with her long-lost sister, and then she ends up moving from North Carolina to D.C. So they find that they have different lifestyles and personalities, but it's all about them bonding as sisters. But Trista also moves on to another phase of life. So it's about the characters, all of the women moving on to a new phase as well.
Well, one of the questions in your reader's guide said, does Ty reflect the views of many women when it comes to their interest in a loving and long-time relationship?
Correct.
And what are the challenges and possible solutions? Let's just kind of talk about that.
Okay. Yes, I wanted to say that Ty, again, she originally, the long-time relationship that she was in, I don't want to give too much of the book away, but it fizzled. So she had just turned 40. And, you know, a lot of women at 40, they feel like, oh, my goodness, I'm not married yet. I don't have any children. What am I going to do? That seems like the magic age. So I think a lot of women could relate to it on that aspect. But she does reflect, I think, the views of many women who may be looking for Mr. Right, and they have this, you know, idea of what they're looking for, you know, someone probably who is successful, who is handsome, who has all these attributes, or, you know, successful businessman, educated, that kind of thing. But sometimes you may have to, like, put all that aside and say, okay, maybe I need to step out of the box a little bit. And I think that, yes, that does reflect, she does reflect the views of many women from that standpoint.
Yes, I know so many couples now that have been married a long time that the women have degrees and the men don't have degrees, but they're good men, you know, they're good hard workers in whatever field they're in. And, you know, I know, like I said, many women who had to change their unrealistic expectations sometimes of what a good man entails.
That's right. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I remember years ago, one of my coworkers, well, she ended up leaving the job because at that point, I think she was expecting maybe her third child. And she said, I'm just working now, going to be working just to pay daycare. But I remember her telling me that she, you know, she was a glamorous type. And I remember her telling me that she, you know, she was married to a fireman. You know, so she seemed very happy with that as well. She seemed very happy. And, again, I think that sometimes you do have to step out of the box in these days and times. Like you said, sometimes it's just not realistic.
Right. It's I was reading in The Final Call this weekend where they're, you know, saying the marriage rate is so low for Latinos, African Americans, it's even dropped for white Americans, and so that makes it harder too when marriage is not seen as glamorous for some men. It makes it look
exactly
hard at marriage. So that makes it harder to get a mate too when men feel that they are the price. It's sort of like the employee right now. It's the employer's market that people have to do 2.5 jobs to keep their one job.
That's right. That's right.
They almost have to, you know, it's almost a competition that you used to didn't have to worry about. There were plenty of men available. You could quit one, have a new one waiting.
Waiting in the wings, huh?
Yeah, so like Beyonce, to the left, to the left.
To the left.
it's
exactly.
Different. And then after 40, the pickings get a little slimmer too.
Exactly, exactly. And that is another thing that's in my book. One of the questions I have also is that would you hook up as a female, would you hook up with someone that's 10, 12, 15 years younger? Because as you said, sometimes the pickings are slimmer once you hit that 40 mark. And that's one of the topics that I explored in the novel as well.
Good. And it says, do you feel that once you turn age 40 that you are considered middle age?
Yes, right. And that's another theme in the book, is that the new saying, 40 is the new 20. I personally truly believe that 40 is the new 20. And as you said earlier, people are living longer and longer now. I have family members in their 80s and 90s now, and you would never realize it or believe it because they seem just as active as they were 20, 30 years ago. They've slowed a little, but not very much. So I do believe that 40 is the new 20, and I believe that women need to live life to the fullest and don't worry about the age thing. Don't let it slow you down. And I believe that it's great to celebrate. I just heard over the weekend, I was actually invited to a 40th birthday party last weekend, as a matter of fact. And it was a woman, a female, and one of her friends also is 40, and she told me that they went to college together, and that the one who had the birthday party last week, she just went to Vegas for a few days, went to Vegas with some friends, and they all were 40, and they were going to celebrate in Vegas. So it reminded me of my novel, actually, to hear about that, that this group of women decided to leave, you know, and I don't know them personally, but I do know the one who just had a birthday actually is married with 3 children. And I thought, that's great. And that's what my book is all about, women living their lives to the fullest, and don't let anything hold you back. Celebrate each day.
Yeah, that's so true. Women are having so much more fun now than I think the previous generation had. When we think of our mothers at 40, they were, you know, just a little more settled than women now, because I have a lot of friends and even family members that haven't married at 40 yet, and some even 45. So they have a different outlook. They're a younger outlook. They like to travel. They get up and travel all over the world and think nothing of it. And so I think it's the options that women have now. They don't necessarily have to be defined by being married. And it's great to have a relationship and wonderful, but now women have a lot of support that they didn't have if they were single. They have more friends. They have more organizations and groups that keep them busy. And it used to be if you were over a certain age, you were considered an old maid. I mean, you could be over 20 and could be considered an old maid at one time.
Exactly. Exactly, yes.
And is it just me? Do you think women look younger now at later ages? I don't know. And I'm not just talking about the celebrities like Nia Long.
Right.
I think women look younger now.
I totally agree. I know women that are in their 50s and 60s who look great. You would never know. You would probably think they're anywhere from 15 to 25 years younger than what they are. Because they look outstanding. They've kept themselves up well, and sometimes I know it's a matter of the genes. But you're right. I do feel that women are looking better at an older age.
Right.
I'd agree with you.
Yes, they get massages. They exercise. They do things that wasn't. We have more education about heart disease and. We have senior groups that you can go to. I'm in one myself, and they have, you know, different things to let you know the things you need to do to have longevity that no one told us before. A lot of people had high blood pressure and didn't know that they were supposed to be on medication.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Right. So all that, having better health is contributing to longer life. And when you say that 40 is the new 20, I kind of think at 20, you're still airheads, but I think it's 20 in terms of people are still discovering themselves and you and doing a lot of young things, skiing and having fun like 20-year-olds.
Absolutely.
Yes. And,
absolutely.
But I wanted to ask, what are some other questions your book, The Next Phase of Life, raises for readers?
Well, one other thing I wanted to mention is the long-lost sister that comes from North Carolina to live with her older sister, they reconnected on Facebook. They're total opposites. So one of the questions is, would it be easy to connect with a sibling that you have not seen since you were a child? You're 40 and you haven't seen her since you were 12. How easy would it be to have them come and live in your home and you have to start all over again from childhood, you know, learning each other again? And also the fact that you have different lifestyles and you're from two different backgrounds. So that's another point I was trying to make. I tried to make it really thought-provoking, and that was another thing I thought, what would it be like to reconnect with someone that is from your past? And it didn't have to be sisters. It could actually be friends. It could be a long-lost friend, and you connect with that person, and years later, you're an adult. You haven't seen them since childhood, and they're nothing like you. You don't have anything in common anymore. How easy would it be to reconnect with them? Would you want to connect with them? And if you didn't, why wouldn't you want to connect with them? So that was another thing that I thought would be interesting to explore.
How did you come up with that idea? Had you seen that in the news, or it just kind of popped up as you were writing?
It actually popped up when I was creating the synopsis. I kind of thought, okay, I know I want to write about a woman turning 40 who's looking for Mr. Right, and she's going to end up with someone that she least expected. But at the same time, I thought, what would it be like to have her be in a relationship with someone that had a totally different lifestyle? And so I thought of the sister. And now that Facebook is so popular, I thought it was realistic that someone could reach out and find a long-lost family member, because as many people do, family members and friends, on Facebook. So I guess 5 years ago, I would have never thought about the whole Facebook aspect. But I did think, okay, now in the day of Facebook, it's possible that a sister who's long lost could reach out and find her sister after all these years, or even have an interest in finding their long lost sibling.
Yes,
so
it
came.
Mm-hmm.
It came during the synopsis.
Oh, okay. So that was in the synopsis. I like how you worked in Facebook and, you know, the showing how it has shaped our lives in a totally different way than we used to do our communication in business, I believe.
Yes, definitely. I remember years ago, I have a daughter that's in college, but years ago, she used to talk about Facebook, of course, MySpace, Facebook, and it seemed to me that Facebook was more for the children, like the preteens and the teens, connecting and finding out who's going to what school. It was more about, I thought, who was going to which middle school or high school. And so I think it definitely has advanced, and now more adults are on it. But originally, I always got the impression it was for the preteens and the teens. So I do agree with you that it really has changed the world.
Yes, and that was a good, you know, it'll really, if this world lasts another 100 years and they're looking up, and, oh, okay, so people used to do Facebook. But, you know, we might be on holy ground so we could just see each other and communicate in our heads.
That's right, uh-huh.
Oh, that was so old-fashioned, but right now this is good, you know, showing how technology has brought people together, and people are finding their family members and lost loved ones as well as friends on there.
Exactly.
I really like that part of the plot.
Mm-hmm. Oh, thank you.
Yes, and the other thing is, since you've been in the publishing industry, What do you see for the future of publishing?
Well, it's interesting because I believe that all genres will continue to be popular. I know that since my sister started writing erotica, that has really, like, taken off. Because I remember when she first started, she started writing short stories and selling them on the Internet. It was underground. And I remember, I think it was 1997, when I first found out, she pulled me aside. I was at a Christmas party in North Carolina. She had moved there, relocated from the Washington, D.C. area. And she had gotten bored because she was living in a little small town. And she started writing these short stories and selling them on the Internet. She pulled me aside and told me about it. And I thought, oh, that's cool. And she, you know, told me how she was remaining anonymous. So I just, mum was the word. And then years later, she actually had created fans, you know, big fan base, big following, and some of the fans were suggesting she compile the stories into an anthology and publish it. So that's what she did, and then that took off, and then she wrote her first novel, Addicted, and then she self-published those two books and then two other books. But erotica, I think there still is a growing market for erotica, romance, suspense, nonfiction, mystery, and of course, you know, urban books. I think they're very popular. I just met a gentleman yesterday. We did the Baltimore Book Festival. I was there originally on a panel discussion on Friday, and then we had a booth there this past weekend. And this man comes up to the booth and says, I've been seeing a lot of these titles lately in New York. But he didn't know how to describe them, so I said, are you talking about urban fiction? And he said, yes, that's urban fiction. So he ended up buying a novel just based on the title and the cover. And it was an urban novel. Mm. And I just thought that was interesting because he said, I've been seeing these books all over New York. And he just decided on a whim to buy an urban novel. That's the only book that he picked out was an urban novel. So I think there's still a great market for urban books.
What do you think about e-books? I know Strayburg Books aren't all your books in e-books now?
Yes, all of our books are e-books now.
Okay. What do you think about the impact of the e-books on the print book sales?
Well, it's definitely taken a hit, but there are still a lot of people who like the old-fashioned hard copy of a novel. And interestingly, like I said, we just did the Baltimore Book Festival this weekend. So I ended up networking with a lot of different people. Some people did buy the hard copy books, and then other people said, oh, is this book available as an e-book? Because I'm just going to download it on my Kindle mm-hmm. or my Nook. And actually, one lady said she had a Sony Reader. Mm-hmm. So there are people who want to just download on their Kindle or their Nook or whatever device they're using now. One lady said she had 700 books in her living room on a bookcase, I guess. So, and then some other people say, I just have too many books. And it's interesting, I actually met right outside my office today, there was a truck driver making a delivery next door in an office building, and he overheard me talking to a FedEx driver today. And so we started talking about books because, you know, it's our publishing office. And he said, I asked him, I gave him some title suggestions. And so he asked me what the title's on Amazon. And I said, oh, yes, they're on Amazon. And anyway, I found out that he has an e-book reader. Mm. He has a Kindle. And I thought that was interesting. He's a truck driver. And so he said he loved his Kindle. And he was planning on going online and downloading some books. And I thought that was interesting. I guess it kind of makes sense because I guess he's on the road all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, but I just kind of thought, oh, a guy driving 18-wheeler with a Kindle. I thought that was cute.
Yeah, I think it's increased reading because I did see that the overall sales in the book industry was up in the billions. So that was an increase percentage-wise, and most of it, I think 20% of came from e-books. So it has helped the market in a one way, but it's
one way
in terms of bookstores, I believe.
Yes, quite a few of the bookstores are closing. There was a gentleman at the festival, I understand, I heard through the grapevine that he was there because he had just closed his store last week. And he had a, you know, independent bookstore, and he had just closed his bookstore that last week, I was told, by another bookstore owner, and he did say that he was, sounded like he was still going to be in business for a while. But you're right, a lot of the stores have closed. A lot of the bookstores have closed.
I don't think we just have to do business a different way. So many of us didn't go online when we had our bookstores where we could have been selling online as well as from the store.
Yes.
And, you know, I think it's just a thing of keeping up with the technology. You either online or you out of business. It's kind of what's happening nowadays. And this is what I've seen that happen that's really been good for me as an agent. I used to, when I first started in 2003, and I didn't get anything to 2005, but I would have to copy whole books and send out, you know, 6 different copies of the same book to different publishing companies. Now I just email, and I don't, you know, I generally just do one at a time. I'll target just one person, but it's so much easier now.
You're right. It's definitely easier. It's definitely easier to receive the manuscripts by email.
Yes, and when you, okay, for listeners who are interested in maybe submitting to Strayboard, could you tell what your company looks for and, you know, the type of books that you publish and how you make your decision?
Okay, yes, we publish all genres, and we ask that the submission include a query letter, a synopsis, and the first 3 or 4 chapters, and usually we base our decision on that. But we do look for manuscripts that are well edited. As you know, and I'm not sure if you've ever had this topic on your show, I'm sure you have, but it's very important to make sure that you present a manuscript that is clean as possible, because the grammar and the spelling and the sentences and all that can really be a turnoff, and you may just get rejected right on the spot. You may have a great idea, you may have a wonderful synopsis, but if we look and it looks like it's going to be too much work and too much editing that can be time-consuming, then normally the manuscript gets rejected. But we do look for manuscripts that are different, that are out of the box, because as you know, there's so many books out here now on the market. There's a lot of competition. But we do look for synopses that are interesting. And other than that, we accept all submissions.
Okay.
Preferably, we still prefer them by hard copy. But if we read the submission and ask for the full manuscript, then we ask for it to be sent to us electronically.
Okay.
The email version of the manuscript.
Okay, and as an editor, you're a copy editor as well, right, Charmaine?
Yes, I do both. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you do content and copy editing?
Yes, I do both, but I do more copy editing than content.
Okay.
I do more copy editing than content.
Okay, well, that's
yes, and I have that background from the newspaper business as well.
No, your books are all good. I get, you know, I have Suzetta Perkins. I think she's on her 6th or 7th book deal with Strayboard. But just all the books I've ever read from your company are so well edited. You know, I have to.
Oh, thank you.
Say that.
I appreciate that.
Right. I've never seen mistakes or anything. So I said, boy, these books are so well edited. And that's
We appreciate that.
Let me see if we have any emails, too, before I forget.
Okay.
Do we have any emails, Corey?
Not at the moment. We don't have any. But if anybody is listening and would like to send emails, just go ahead and email your question to dj@artistfirst.com, and I will go ahead and chime in, and I'll read an email for you. But at the moment, we don't have any emails.
Okay. All right. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Charmaine.
Oh, no problem. I was just saying that we are always looking for new authors. And we have a lot of repeat authors, like you mentioned, Suzetta Perkins. She's a wonderful author, and I personally love her writing, her writing style.
Yes.
But yes, we are still accepting submissions, and we always have a backlog of them. But we have some, I believe there's a lot of talent, untapped talent out there. And it's a wonderful thing to be able to assist a writer into becoming an author, to have them to help them realize their dream. Because for some, it's been a lifetime that they've been attempting to get published or to write a manuscript. And so it's a wonderful thing. It's such a variety out here now as well. And so that's a blessing. It's exciting. It's very exciting.
Mm-hmm. We definitely have so many different types of books now that we didn't have before. We didn't have that much of a selection for black books. We only had basically the literary books.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Now we have more young adults, we have more, what I like about the different urban books, even the street fiction, we have a voice for people who have grown up hard where they can say, okay, this is somebody whose life has been like mine, because when you go to school, a lot of times they don't have that many black books in the library or in the classroom.
That's true. Some people made that comment yesterday. They were saying that there's more variety now than when they were coming up. They didn't have the choices that we have now, and that the children have now, and the young people.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and how about erotica? What do you think the reason erotica blew up like it did for African Americans? What is your take on it?
You know, I don't want to sound biased, you know, because of Zane being my baby sister, but just from listening to other people, and including some people that I spoke with over the weekend at this book festival, one lady, she writes erotica, and she told me that she was a cross between Elin Harris and Zane. And she said that they were her inspiration. Mm-hmm. And there were some other people, you know, that made similar comments. Like someone said, I can't remember the exact words, but they were saying something was before Zane. Like, in other words, Zane helped to make the genre popular, basically.
I believe that's true. And also, we were very puritanical as African Americans. Our books, we also always had to be representative of the race. And I'm putting my fingers up in the quotes around it. We had to be good women. We could not be, after slavery, we could not be loose women. We could not be women who enjoyed sex, and slavery actually warped our sexuality because it was forced a lot of times. So we really did not have that enjoyment of sex, and you really don't even see it in the books. You only see it as maids and mammies and so forth in a lot of the books that came out that were written by whites, of course, from their perception of what it was to be a black woman. So when a black woman tells her story, you know, I don't like to talk against some of the movies that have gotten a lot of play, and I don't even want to call the name, but I've never seen a book get the type of accolades if it was written by a black maid herself. But when somebody white writes about it, and they're not even in the shoes, they don't get those type of accolades. And I've even seen that. I can call his name James Patterson because he made $80 million last year, so it's not hurting him at all, having a black character. So I like having to see a black woman. I think that's what Zane did. She was groundbreaking there and kicking in the door. Short black woman enjoys sex. And that was good. And I think that's why the erotica is just so fresh in the African-American community, because we didn't have it that I can think of.
You're absolutely right about that. She did break ground, and that was her whole, for her first anthology, and that was the very first book that she self-published, was The Sex Chronicles, Shattering the Myth, as the subtitle, Shattering the Myth. And that was what that meant about women. It was about women and sexual, female sexual empowerment. And they're breaking, like you said, breaking ground, breaking through, breaking out. And that was and still is one of her platforms. So, yes, I do agree with you about women and how, as far as African-American women, we were taught, like you said, to be, you know, to hide everything, to keep everything hush-hush, and it was, you know, extremely puritanical, and I totally agree with you about that. But I do think now that erotica is more acceptable. I mean, you still have people that, you know, kind of frown down on it, but it's become extremely popular.
Yes, and it's like, it's been about, how long? Well, 97 when she had the kind of underground following.
Right, with her short story. She started writing then.
So just the show from there to, how many books has Straight Boy published since y'all started the publishing company in 2001, was it?
She self-published in 2000, in the year 2000. And then we started picking up authors, I think it was about 2002, and we just probably had a handful initially. Mm. And then on and on and on. So now we end up in the hundreds of titles. And Zane has 26 books, including her novels and anthologies, and her one nonfiction titled Dear G-Spot, make it a total of 26.
Wow, I didn't realize she had that many books. And then she also has a TV show, right?
Yes, her TV show, Zane's Sex Chronicles on Cinemax, she had two seasons. She wrote two seasons. She wrote all 13 episodes of two seasons. And she decided to not bring it back. So now she's actually filming, as we speak, in L.A., she's filming her new series for Cinemax. It's going to be called Jump Off. Mm. And she is the executive producer, and she also wrote all 13 episodes of The Jump Off. Mm. And this time, instead of four female characters as the lead characters, she has five male characters as the lead characters. So she's filming that in L.A., and I believe it's likely to premiere in April of 2012. But she's shooting it now in L.A., and it's just amazing that she went from, like I said, the short stories, you know, behind-the-scenes type of thing. You know, no one in my family knew, besides my other sister and me, that she was Zane, and that she was, you know, writing short stories and sell them on the internet.
Mm. And I mean,
but it all
from
just
self-publishing to now doing a whole TV series that she's doing the writing and the producing. That's just to show that dreams are possible. And this is such a long leap that she's gone in such a short period of time. You can't believe it's up there with Tyler Perry as far as I'm concerned, because she started out doing it herself. She didn't wait for somebody to come along and say, you can do this. She just did what she did. And this is how most artists need to do. Just now, that seems to be the way to get into films, to get into the literary industry, is to create your own door. And you know, like the cartoons where you draw the door, and when you run, then open it and run through. So, I mean, that is just fantastic. And you know, even your book seems like it could be a film. Is she doing a film, too? I think I saw that on Facebook, that she had a film.
Oh, yes. She's set to do the film for Addicted.
Oh, that's my favorite of her books.
Oh, is it? Yes, that's the first novel. And, yes, that's one of my favorites, too. I actually treasured that particular book because she actually gave me the manuscript to edit for her.
Oh, you edited it?
Oh. I edited Addicted. But it's funny, I always tell this story. I edited Addicted, but by the time I gave her the manuscript back, and that was when, of course, you did the hard copy. You didn't do the electronic editing and all that. She had already published it. But I actually still have the hard copy. And I said, I'm going to save it. I haven't put it away in a safe place. But she gave me Addicted to edit for her. And that's why she definitely had no idea. Definitely had no idea that she was going to ever, be this popular. Or, again, that was back when she had just published the Self Chronicles. I'm sorry, the Sex Chronicles. She had self-published the Sex Chronicles. And she gave me Addicted because she decided to write a novel. And she gave it to me to edit. And then she ended up self-publishing it. And it did become number one on Essence magazine list for, I believe it was 3 straight years. Mm-hmm. Consecutive years, she was number one, Addicted. And even, with that popularity, and that's been years now, she's getting ready to become a film.
All right. And see, that book was the first book that I can remember that dealt with sexual addiction among African Americans.
Isn't that interesting? It was an interesting topic. That another, I guess, again, it was groundbreaking.
Yes, and just being edgy, she always was edgy. I think I've even heard women say they get ideas from her books.
Yes, I've heard women say the same thing.
And then when they meet Zane, they're just shocked because they expect her to be somebody that's going to be all, hanging out and bluesy looking. And she's very conservative looking.
Exactly.
Everybody's
right.
Always surprised at how conservative looking she is. So.
That's true.
And so she's got a vivid imagination, too.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. Definitely a vivid imagination. But actually, she also started writing as a child.
Okay.
And I remember when she was in elementary school, she was writing. And it's interesting because I always thought that she would probably write mysteries, which, she could write any type of genre, like thrillers, mysteries, that kind of thing as well.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. She's very, she's versatile.
I know she seems like she's a reader because many times when it's a book she wants, she's read it. And I know you read a lot of them, but for any book pretty much that she bought from me as an agent, I could tell she had read it. And she held Suzetta. She said, I was on the bus. I couldn't read it yet, but I'm going to read it. It took a while. It finally come through, and now it's all the rest is history every year. I think she had 2 books out this year. Didn't realize her book came out in June and now another one in September.
Mm-hmm.
I think she has one coming out tomorrow.
Yes, Betrayed.
Uh-huh.
Betrayed is her latest book. Mm-hmm.
My goodness. So it has really been something how, not only has she opened doors for herself, she's opened doors for others, including myself and you, so that's the good thing. I think that's why she keeps being blessed, too.
Yes, I agree with that because I remember in the very beginning when I started working with her, it was late 2001, early 2002, and I was in between jobs. I was looking for another job in the either newspaper business or PR or the media, and I started working with her, and she had just signed maybe 1 or 2 authors, and then more and more manuscripts started coming in, and she started signing more and more people, and she helped a lot of, wannabe authors, people who had been trying. Some people told me they had been trying 8 to 10 years to get their books published, and they had been rejected. They have a collection of rejection letters.
Mm.
So that's when I started realizing, wow, she really is helping a lot of people get published that had been turned down for literally a decade. Yeah, so
the bad thing is those books have been good since Zane have published them because I read a long time ago. She had sold over 1 million books. That was some years back of different people's books. So it's a shame that we had gatekeepers that kept books out of the public's eye, and that was before self-publishing became more popular and people just would take their manuscripts and put them under their mattress. But now, with her having her company and books develop that credibility when they go out, give me a Straber book. People are kind of looking for the books that are coming out each month.
Yes, uh-huh.
That is really giving people an opportunity that they would have never had even 15 years ago, and that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm, that's true. We have opened doors for a lot of authors, and that's a great feeling. I've always was excited about helping people. And you never know. For instance, our author, I guess our most prolific author who is continually writing, I know that, like you said, Suzetta Perkins is, Allison Hobbs,
right.
We signed together this weekend at the Baltimore Book Festival. She was at our table as well as Suzetta, and they both did extremely well. And they have a lot of fans in the D.C. Baltimore area. And they did extremely well. And a lot of people came to the booth knowing them, recognizing them, knowing them. There were a lot of hugs. And they have a lot of fans. But Allison and I met at the Baltimore Book Festival. She was a self-published author. And we met in 2002. And we were just walking along, and we struck up a conversation. And so she invited me to come to her booth the next day and get a copy of her book, Pandora's Box. And Zane ended up managing her way to her booth the following day, the day that I went by.
Yeah.
And ended up, you know, purchasing her book, and she read it, and she said, I'm going to put it back out. So do you know that Allison Hobbs now is getting ready to finish writing her 17th novel?
Yeah.
And that is amazing, book 17. And like I said, when I met her, she was a self-published author. She was there, like you said, follow your dream and don't give up, because you just never know. You know, you never know who you're going to meet. You never know who you're going to network with. And I just believe that you should just believe in yourself and don't give up. And as a matter of fact, a lady stopped at the book festival on Saturday. I met her at the Baltimore Book Festival years ago. And she's an aspiring author, and she's probably been working on her manuscript for at least 5 years. So she was seeking my advice as well. But she also had purchased my book, and she brought it there for me to sign. But I tried to give her advice to keep going. Don't give up. She's written, I think she said close to 200 pages, but it's interesting because she's writing a memoir. She's writing about her life, and she didn't know whether to write it as a memoir or to write it as fiction. So she was seeking my advice. So I appreciate the fact that, you know, people are also, you know, go-getters, and they want to network, and they want to ask you questions. And they seek advice from you as a publisher, or in my case, I'm a publishing director. But again, like you said, I think that you should always follow your dream and just don't give up. Don't give up.
Right. That's a good piece of advice, because so many people have given up, and now this is really a writer's market in terms of the writing. So many writers have sold as much as 15,000 to 20,000 a month with their Kindles. And these are self-published writers. We have our first set of self-published writers who are getting picked up with foreign rights deals, and we're
uh-huh.
the first set of self-published writers who are hitting the New York Times because of their books on Kindle. But they have to be good books. You cannot put your books out there without having them edited.
That's right.
All that, and preferably content edited and copy edited for fiction.
Uh-huh.
This is really a good time for writers, and, you know, they have publishing companies such as Strayboy. We have Charmaine, who's an excellent editor, and, you know, the director. You know, y'all seem to have a good eye for good books and bringing in some different things, like Allison Hobbs. She writes erotica, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and 17 books, and she's been an Essence bestseller, hasn't she?
You know, I'm not sure if she has. I'm not sure if she has. Yes, she has. She is extremely popular. I can tell you just from being with her as a vendor yesterday at the Baltimore Book Festival, where she made an appearance this weekend, quite a few readers came up to her, and they had read a lot of her books, a lot of her titles. They were familiar with her. But she always said that this Baltimore, Maryland, D.C. area, they seem to have a great readers market here, a big fan base here in this area.
Mm.
And I'm based in the D.C. Maryland area.
Oh, okay. And see, the good thing about the conferences, I haven't been to the Baltimore conference since 2002, I think it was, but maybe next year I'll be able to get back out there. But so many people, I'm going to tell you, two book deals I've gotten recently have come as a result of writers going to conferences like this. And,
yes.
and the person making that eyeball face-to-face contact. And all I have to do is just send in the letter, and they've already kind of made up their mind because they like the writer. And the new thing for writers is you have to be the whole package. You got to be able to promote, market, connect with your readers, and write your book. It's no longer you can just write your book and go sit down and expect the publisher to do all the work. What advice do you give writers as far as marketing?
You know what? That's a very good point. I'm glad you brought that up. Because you do have to have the whole package, as you say. Now, it's more than just writing a book and just letting it, you know, be published. Because, you know, for one thing, Zane always says she can help a writer get published. She can publish them, but it's going to be up to the writer to get the book off the shelves. Well, now, of course, off the Internet, off the shelves, off the Internet, because we have the e-books. But it's up to the writer to help promote his or her own book. Because, as you said, it's just not coming from the publishing houses as much anymore. And a writer, an author, does have to be a strong self-promoter, a marketer, has to have a lot of initiation and be proactive. A lot of, you know, because a lot of the writers and authors are using the social networking sites now to help promote and get the word out. But you do have to do a lot of self-promoting now. You do have to do a lot of self-promoting. It's not just getting your book out, like you said, and you just sit back and see what happens. And so, yes, we are looking for writers and authors who have the whole package. And that's why I'm actually glad that I'm getting out more. I'm getting out now more than I used to. I mean, we used to a lot, but by me being an author now, and I'm out on the, I've been out on the road or in the area locally promoting my book, I'm constantly meeting people. And I've been meeting, you know, some authors or would be authors who are telling me, I have a great story to tell. You know, how do I get started? And they, you know, sometimes they have a synopsis, or sometimes they may want to just write about their experiences in life. But it's also good to connect with them, like you said, face to face, eye to eye, and you can kind of tell by meeting people. And sometimes even, you know, on the phone, I've talked to some people. I talked to someone today. It's someone that I have a strong feeling that this person would make a good author, because he's had a self-published book. He has another book that he submitted to us, but he has a self-published book, and he travels all around promoting his book, his self-published book. And he's been doing it for years. And just based on our conversations, I could tell he's really driven, and he has a lot of drive, a lot of initiative, and he seems very, you know, he's strong-minded and strong-willed, and I could tell that he would be a great promoter if, you know, if we were to pick him up. But you're right, people are looking for the whole package now, personality, you know, everything. It's not just what's on paper.
Right, you can't, like they used to say, it looks good on paper, but now you can't just write well. You have to do it all, and give out the website for Strayboar, and give out where your book, The Next Phase of Life, where it's available, and any upcoming signings where you'll be at, Charmaine.
Okay, yes, it's StrayboarBooks.com, and that's StreBoR. Books.com. I'm on Facebook under Charmaine Roberts Parker. My email is Charmaine, charmainerparker@gmail.com. And I'll be appearing, my next author appearance will be this coming Thursday, September 30th, 5 o'clock p.m. at the Barnes & Noble at Union Station, which is the Amtrak station in Washington, D.C. That's my next appearance, Thursday, September 30th, 5 p.m.
Well, congratulations again on your book, and just keep up the good work. You know, your book is good. I look forward to the next one. Just give us a little peek on your next book. When do you plan on doing another book for us?
Thank you. I'm running, there are several synopses that are running through my head, and I'm not sure exactly which one I'm going to go with. One was to do a follow-up to The Next Phase of Life, which I eventually may do a sequel. But I have two other ideas that I've thought about, and hopefully I'll be able to get published in the next couple years.
Okay, well, just keep writing. We're definitely looking for more books from you. This is it's a treat. You know, you have a nice voice and a nice sound to your book, too. So continued success. Keep up the good work, and I look forward to having you back on the show when you have your next book come out.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much.
All right, you're welcome, and thanks for coming on Dr. Maxine Thompson's show. Charmaine R. Parker, Sister of Zane, her book is The Next Phase of Life. Please go out and pick it up.
Thank you. Have a good night.
All right, you too. Please return next week for the Dr. Maxine Thompson Show. We're going to have T. Style, CEO of the Cartel Publications. Have a great week. Love you all.